You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock. Coming up over the next hour, and we'll be looking back at last night's final game of the Premier League weekend at Selhurst Park as Crystal Palace and Brighton shared the points in a 1-1 draw. So we look back at that game on the Monday night football. We'll also look back at the draws that took place in both the Champions League and the Europa League. All 9 British sides finding out their fate in the last 16 of the Champions League and the last 32 of the Europa League. We'll also look at some of the other big stories in the Premier League. Could Carlo Ancelotti become Everton's next manager? Is Mikel Arteta in line to be the next Arsenal manager? Where is Paul Pogba? And how much money will Chelsea have to spend in the January transfer window? We'll also have a look ahead of the Carabao Cup quarterfinals tonight. One of those 4 fixtures as Aston Villa host Liverpool. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to come over the next hour. That number again, 0208 7020 558. We want to hear from you this afternoon, sharing your views on your Premier League club. So let's look at the main stories then in the Premier League. Obviously, there was one game in the Premier League last night, the final one of this round of fixtures, and it was at Selhurst Park, the M23 derby, even though the M23 doesn't run through Crystal or doesn't run through Selhurst Park or near Selhurst Park, and it doesn't either run through the Amex either. It's a road that just happens to go in between them but doesn't actually intersect both places. It seems strange, but anyway, it is dubbed the M23 derby, and the point was shared between the two sides. Neil Maupay had given Brighton the lead, his 7th goal of the season after moving from Brentford in the summer. But Wilfried Zaha's good strike in the second half meant that it finished 1-1 between the two sides. So the final game of the Premier League weekend ended in a draw. And as we look at the Premier League table, it takes Crystal Palace up to 9th place. They actually go above Arsenal after their points. Yesterday, Brighton are in 13th, just 3 points behind Crystal Palace. Some of the other big stories, and there are, of course, a number of big stories that are rumbling on in the Premier League, a number of managerial ones. It took a while for managers or the domino effect to start. Up until the start of the November international break, it was only Javi Gracia that had lost his job at Watford, and we were wondering what's going on. In this short-termism world, why are all these managers staying in their jobs? But as soon as Tottenham decided that Mauricio Pochettino wasn't their man, it really has all kicked off since then. At Everton, obviously, it's been 11 days, just over since, 11 days it is, since Marco Silva lost his job after Everton lost 5-2 in the Merseyside derby to Liverpool. The search has been on for Everton. They've been linked to David Moyes. They've been linked to Vitor Pereira. But it seems like they might have their man. It's believed that Carlo Ancelotti has held talks with Everton and has agreed a deal in principle to become the Everton manager. Now, these are unconfirmed. We don't know where this is definitely going to happen. But the expectation is he could be the manager on Thursday or Friday ahead of a game against Arsenal coming up at Goodison Park this weekend. It would be a significant coup for Ancelotti. The big question, what we've been hearing here on the Breakfast Show this morning, they were talking to an Italian football expert and wondering why Ancelotti is taking this job, because I regard, and I think a lot of people regard him as still a top manager, despite the fact that he's now 60 and has been around for a long time. I think he's still regarded as one of, perhaps not the one of the elite managers, but still a very good manager that's won a lot at Chelsea, at PSG, at AC Milan, at Real Madrid, at Bayern Munich. The list simply does go on. Obviously, he was sacked by Napoli despite taking them into the knockout stages where they'll take on Barcelona in the last 16 of the Champions League. He's a very, very good manager, and it feels, for in my opinion, as a step down for him, but a massive, massive coup for Everton if they can get this over the line. Now, I don't. Some suggestions are indicating that it is all virtually done. Other reports are suggesting there is still a lot of work to do to get this deal over the line. But it would be a significant appointment for Everton if they were able to get Carlo Ancelotti over the line. As I said, if he were to be appointed on Thursday or Friday, he would be in charge for Everton's next game, which is at Goodison Park on the weekend against Arsenal, who themselves could have a new manager by the weekend. They've been on the search since they sacked Unai Emery. Very much a bad evening for Unai. And it is believed that Mikel Arteta is now leading the chase. He is the leading contender for the Arsenal job. On the back of the Times today, Arsenal close in on deal to land Arteta. In the Telegraph today, City anger as Arteta closes on Arsenal job. He's met with Josh Kroenke and prepares for the Arsenal move, although City are believed to be upset about the approach for his assistant after they played each other on Sunday. It seems strange that they followed him up to his home in the northwest rather than just simply be open about it and say, we want to have talks with your assistant managers, that's okay, and have them down in London. But that wasn't the case. Obviously, the big question on everyone's lips is Mikel Arteta the right man for the Arsenal job? I think fans would get on side because he was a former player there and a former captain of the Gunners. But is he the right man at this moment in time? I don't think it is. He may be doing a fantastic job as Pep Guardiola's assistant at Manchester City, but as so many have proven over the years, whether it be someone like Paul Clement, who was a backup to Ancelotti, I think, at Real Madrid and at Bayern Munich. You take someone like who hasn't decided to go down that route of Steve Holland, who's always acted as a fantastic backup. You think of Mike Phelan to Sir Alex Ferguson and then ventured into management and that didn't go well. That there's no guarantee just because you're a fantastic assistant coach that you're going to be a good manager. It's a completely different role that you are playing. And so there's no guarantees that just because Arteta is seemingly, and from all that we've heard, has done a very good job at Manchester City backing up Pep Guardiola, there's no guarantee that he could step into any job. There's no guarantee if he stepped up as the Manchester City manager that he would do as good a job as Pep Guardiola has done, especially in the Premier League with City getting 198 points over the last couple of seasons. But it feels like the wrong time for Arteta to go into the Arsenal job. Now, it would be very difficult for him to turn this job down because this is his first opportunity in full-time management as a full-time head coach, I think, is the role that they would give him. And that would be a difficult role. Arsenal are still a big club, even though they're in a pretty dire state at the moment. That would be a pretty difficult club or difficult offer to turn down. But there are so many problems at Arsenal, and all the guests that we've had on here on the Premier League fan show and all the Arsenal fans you hear will tell you that there are much bigger problems, much more kind of underlying problems that need to be sorted, that it's not just as simple as a new manager coming in and suddenly solving everything. I think that's a case at a number of clubs that you take. If West Ham were to pull the plug on Manuel Pellegrini, Everton putting the plug on Marco Silva, that yes, it's one thing changing your manager and that changing something. It's not suddenly going to change everything. It's not going to turn everything around. There are much bigger problems at Arsenal than simply the manager and the manager changing. That Arteta, even though it would be very difficult for him to turn down this job, in particular with your very first job as a manager or a head coach, you have to think long and hard about it because that can either enhance or severely damage your reputation. That can determine really how what sort of path your career goes down. And if he goes to Arsenal and it kind of goes awfully and things don't go well and he gets sacked within a year, where will his reputation be at? And so it's why as a coach going into management, it's why you need to think hard about the club you're going into, the ownership that will be kind of above you, what the playing staff is like, where's the club going, what's been happening over the last couple of years. You have to have a meticulous planning when you go into management. And Arteta, it's a big, massive decision for him because he will have a lot of love for Arsenal, having not just played there, but being captain at the Emirates. But it's a very difficult one because you look at the playing staff and there is so much change that's needed. They need a whole new back four, a new goalkeeper, a whole new midfield. That there is so much wrong with the Arsenal playing squad, and that's just the start of it. That this is not going to be a simple quick fix for Arsenal. This is going to be a number of years of building up to it, and you have to constantly make the right decision from top to bottom. And Arteta going in, it's a big risk for him. I can understand why it'd be difficult for him to turn it down and refuse that job, but it's a very, very huge decision. It could dictate the way his career turns out in management. So it seems like he is edging towards that, although Manchester City, as I've mentioned, not particularly happy about the manner in which Arsenal have gone about it. But in theory, at Goodison Park, it could be two new managers. It could be Carlo Ancelotti against Mikel Arteta. Certainly an interesting game in store between Everton and Arsenal on the weekend. Another big story from the Premier League, Paul Pogba. Well, his return from injury has been delayed due to illness. Now, this is despite being pictured just a matter of days ago at his brother's wedding. And he looked absolutely fine when he was dancing on the dance floor. It seems very strange. And it does feel like a move by Paul Pogba to secure a move away from Manchester United in the January transfer window. Whether Manchester United would sanction that in January or whether the United hierarchy are thinking, is he worth all the bother? He's been injured for a significant amount of time now and isn't even fit because he's supposedly ill. Is he worth all the bother? Have they achieved all the commercial value from that signing? Also, Chelsea, they could be busy. They could be active in the January transfer window. Obviously, their transfer ban was lifted, having been banned from making some summer signings at the start of this season. Supposedly, Frank Lampard might have a £150 million transfer budget. They've drawn up a number of forwards that could be on that shortlist. It includes Jadon Sancho. It includes Wilfred Zaha. And then also a few others, Bayer Leverkusen's Leon Bailey, and also Villarreal's Samuel Chukwueze. So a few different players in there that potentially are on their shortlist. It will be interesting to see how much faith Frank Lampard keeps in some of the youngsters and how much money they do go and spend over the January transfer window. Just a reminder then of some of the draws that took place yesterday. The nine British clubs in both the Champions League and Europa League. As I'm just going to cut across from that, because a bit of breaking news that's come in just in the last few moments. Sky in Italy are reporting that Carlo Ancelotti has agreed a 4.5-year contract to become the Everton head coach. His son Davide Ancelotti will be his assistant alongside Duncan Ferguson. So those are reports coming from Sky in Italy, literally in the last few moments. They are reporting in Italy that Carlo Ancelotti has agreed a 4.5-year contract to become the new Everton head coach. So we were just talking about it a few minutes ago there. Sky in Italy, usually pretty reliable, reporting that he has agreed a 4.5-year contract at Everton. Everton fans out there, how happy are you about this news? Just going back, as I said, the Champions League last 16 draw took place yesterday. Real Madrid's take on Manchester City. These are obviously the ties involving the English side. Atletico Madrid will take on Liverpool. Chelsea play Bayern Munich. Tottenham play Leipzig. So Pep Guardiola renewing his rivalry with Real Madrid from his days at Barcelona. Liverpool returning to the scene of obviously their Champions League win in June at the Wanda Metropolitano, where Liverpool beat Tottenham in the Champions League final to win their sixth European Cup in June. Chelsea in a rematch of the 2012 Champions League final that they won against Bayern Munich. Tottenham, it may seem like they've got an easy draw, but they are taking on the side that are top of the Bundesliga at the moment. And just a rundown of the Europa League last 32 draw involving the five British clubs. Wolves will take on Espanyol. Rangers play Braga. Club Brugge against Manchester United. Olympiacos against Arsenal. And Copenhagen take on Celtic. So those are both the Champions League last 16 and Europa League last 32 draws. Just a reminder of that breaking news in just the last few minutes. Coming out of Sky in Italy is the news that Carlo Ancelotti has supposedly agreed a 4.5-year contract to become the next Everton head coach. Remember, if you want to get in touch, share your views on Ancelotti or any other Premier League story, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Later in the hour, we're going to have reaction to last night's game at Selhurst Park as Palace drew 1-1 with Brighton. We're also going to hear a little bit on Manchester City and Arsenal's approach for Mikel Arteta. But up next, we'll be talking all things Aston Villa.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. A reminder of that breaking news in the last 5 or 10 minutes. Sky in Italy are reporting that Carlo Ancelotti has agreed to become the new Everton head coach on a 4.5-year contract. Obviously, nothing confirmed by Everton, but Sky and Italy, usually pretty reliable, have revealed that Ancelotti has agreed on a deal to become the Everton head coach on a 4.5-year deal. Let's talk now about Aston Villa. They're in Carabao Cup action tonight. They take on Liverpool in the first of the 4 quarterfinals. Obviously, a lot has been made of the fact that Liverpool will be playing academy side as they're playing in the Club World Cup tomorrow afternoon / evening over in Qatar. To talk all things Villa now, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Max Stokes from the Villa On Tour YouTube channel. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Max. Before we look ahead to that Carabao Cup quarterfinal tonight, just looking back at the weekend, a disappointing result for Villa. They lost 2-0 at Sheffield United on the weekend. Jack Grealish missed a penalty, which could have meant Villa could have been fighting for a point late on. What did you make of that game against, obviously, a fellow newly promoted side? And Sheffield United have impressed many this season. What were your views on that game on Saturday?
It wasn't great at all. I think the first half was one of the worst halves of football I've ever seen. I know Villa didn't have a shot on target the whole game, especially in the first half. We didn't trouble their defence or goalkeeper at all. I know Sheffield United didn't have a fat lot going their way as well in the first half. I don't think our defence had anything massive to worry about. So I think the first half was just a stalemate, 0-0, absolutely nothing happened. But it's been the case in our last 3 games. I think, you know, against Chelsea, Leicester and Sheffield United, just after half-time, we've conceded a goal. And that just puts, you know, everything Dean Smith has potentially said at half-time, you know, that's just gone to pot, really, because we've just conceded an early goal. And then from then on, did the floodgates open and did players' concentrations go and things like that. So, yeah, it wasn't great in the second half. Fair play. But the first Sheffield United goal was really, really good. The back heel from Basham, I think it was. Another cross and, you know, they go 1-0 up. And from that point, I'm not massively confident because, like I said, we didn't create anything in that game up to that point. So, yeah, and then they get the second one. And then, in my opinion, that's game over. I know we had the penalty. And as soon as that missed, you just knew that was game over because we didn't look like creating anything all day. So it was really disappointing. I'm surprised there wasn't a reaction from the disappointing performance at Leicester the week before. But yeah, it really wasn't good. And it is a little bit worrying, that performance. But, you know, we go again.
Looking then at Aston Villa's position in the table, they're 17th, so just outside the relegation zone, only on goal difference. Is this where you expected Villa to roughly be, that it was going to be a case this season of, obviously, I'm sure you would take anything just above the relegation zone, you'd take anywhere, so long as it meant not being relegated. Is this where you anticipated being, or would you have thought maybe Villa would have got a few more points and be a few kind of positions further away from the relegation zone?
I think that's a difficult one, because if you offered me 17th right now, I'd 100% take it. But, you know, we spent £130 million in the summer. We signed 12 players, a lot of them I've never heard of, like Douglas Luiz, a Manchester City wonder kid. You know, there's a lot of expectation there. So, you know, a lot of Villa fans are saying, you know, let's fight for the top half. But, you know, I was never really confident. The Premier League is a really strong league. There's no easy games ever. I know it's a cliche, but, yeah, I'd 100% take 17th now. I would have expected Villa to be around here, you know, at the start of the season, because, like I said, there's a lot of strong sides in the Premier League, and especially this season as well. There's no standout team that look like they're really, really in trouble. I know Watford are struggling, but in the last few years, we've had Fulham that have massively struggled. You know, even Villa 3 years ago, they lost 17 points when we went down. So there's always that one team that really looks like they're going down. But this year, I think, you know, Watford, they've got a really, really good squad. Delafoe is a class player, and, you know, Pereira as well. So, you know, they could come out of nowhere and scrape safety if they needed to. So it's a tough one. I think I'd take 17th, like I said, but, you know, we've got 3 massive games coming up now that are the bottom 3. So that will 100% define our season, in my opinion.
You mentioned, Max, about the money spent over the summer. Villa spent £127 million over the summer. People were wondering, is it going to be another example of Fulham spending over £100 million and then getting relegated, or is it going to work out? Looking back at that with hindsight, which is obviously a wonderful thing, do you think that, Villa went with the right approach, and therefore going into January, do you think because of the money that Dean Smith spent over the summer that Villa are unlikely to do much business in January?
To be honest, I don't really think we had much of a choice in the summer. There was a lot of players that contracts were running down. You look at the likes of Alan Hutton, Whelan, Jedinak. They were never, ever going to step up to the Premier League. You know, good players in the Championship, but they were never going to step up in the Premier League and help us survive. So I think there was an element of we had to spend that money. Unlike Fulham a few years ago, they just went gung-ho and just spent as much money as they possibly could on, you know, the big-name players. But I think we did have to spend the money. You know, there's a lot of different players, different nationalities, different leagues that have come into the Villa squad. So it's always going to take time to gel. And the fact that we're not in the relegation zone as we speak, I think that's good. You know, the longer, you know, this squad is together, they'll gel more, they'll get to know each other more, they'll get to know each other in terms of personalities and how they play on the pitch. So that's only a positive. Dean Smith will get to know the players as well and how they play and the different formations we could possibly play to get the best out of the squad. So, yeah, we did spend a lot of money. And, you know, from an outsider's perspective, if you're looking at that, you may think, you know, well, Villa have messed up here because they're 17th and they've spent that much money. But I think we had to spend the money. And, you know, in January as well, I don't think we'll be spending anywhere near that, obviously. I think maybe if we get one or two, you know, just to tweak the squad a little bit to make it, you know, properly good. And then, you know, maybe a striker or winger, just because Wesley's not doing brilliantly at the moment. But yeah, just a few tweaks in January, not spending massive money like, you know, 15, 20 millions or anything like that. Just a few tweaks. And yeah, I think that's what Dean Smith wants to do. And that's probably the best for Villa at the moment.
One of those signings that was made over the summer was Douglas Luiz, who came in from Manchester City for about £15 million. There's an exclusive interview in The Telegraph with him today, titled City Wasn't Meant to Be, I'm Living the Dream at Villa. He wasn't able to secure a work permit to play for City, but did manage to secure one to play for Aston Villa. What have you made of him in his first few months at Villa? And do you think that because of how highly City rated him and how much they wanted to keep him, but obviously couldn't keep him, it shows how big a talent he potentially is going to be?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about it. There's a quality player in there. I mean, Pep, I know it's a cliche again, Pep wouldn't want him if he wasn't that good, you know what I mean? So it is a tough one. At the moment, I'm not 100% sure what type of player he actually is, because he came on against Chelsea as a substitute a couple of weeks ago, and he looked really, really good. Like, going forward, he was in the box. You know, he looked like the one who was most likely to score. But then other weeks, he sits a bit deep and he doesn't actually get forward and he doesn't look massively mobile on the pitch. So at the moment, I'm really not too sure what sort of player he is. Like, you can see the qualities in there. He scored a few wonder goals already this season, so you can see the qualities there. But I just don't really know what sort of player he is. Is he an attacking midfielder? Is he a box-to-box? Is he a defensive, you know, ball-playing midfielder? I'm really not too sure at the moment. But like I said, there's definitely a really, really good player in there. And the longer he's in this squad and the longer, you know, he can play football at Villa, I think there's no doubt he'll be, you know, a star player in the future. I mean, he wouldn't be a fully Brazil international, you know, the age of whatever he is, 21, 22, if he wasn't a really good player. So there's no doubt about it. His potential is absolutely, you know, sky high. So I'm confident that he'll be a mainstay in the Villa squad, and maybe one day he'll go back to Man City, because he is a phenomenal player. And, you know, the longer this goes on, we just have to wait to see what sort of player he is, because at the moment I'm not too sure, to be honest.
Looking ahead then to Villa's game tonight, Aston Villa host Liverpool in the Carabao Cup quarterfinals, the first of the four quarterfinals to take place over the next couple of nights. Obviously, Liverpool are having to struggle playing two games in 2 days, thousands of miles apart. Liverpool play at 7:45 tonight at Villa with the academy side, and then at 5:30 tomorrow over in Qatar with the first team in the Club World Cup. How do you think Dean Smith will be looking at team selection tonight? I know that I think John McGinn might be out injured tonight. There could be a few players rested before the league fixture, which will be a crucial one on the weekend against Southampton, two sides that are right next to each other in the Premier League table. How would a Villa go into tonight's game in terms of their team selection?
I think it's a difficult one, because I think there's, you know, two sides of the fence here, because you could say, you know, give Wesley a go up top to maybe get a goal and get his confidence going. But then on the other hand, you know, play your reserve side, because no offence to this Liverpool Academy side, we should be beating them even with our second string side. I don't think we'll see the likes of McGinn, Grealish, anyone, you know, Heaton as well, Engels, anyone like that. But I think, to be fair, we've seen it already in the Carabao Cup, but our second string side is very, very good. Conor Hourihan to come in, you know, Douglas Luiz, I think, will probably start tonight because he didn't on Saturday against Sheffield United. So our second string side is really good. We beat Wolves, Brighton in the rounds leading up to this. So I think, you know, you could still rotate fully and probably beat this Academy 11. I'm not too sure on the team news tonight in terms of Liverpool, but even still, I think we should be going to win tonight. And if we don't, it will be a little bit embarrassing. I don't want to sound arrogant or anything like that, but even with our second string side, we've got a lot of quality in there. And I think we should be going, you know, for the kill tonight to beat Liverpool's Academy side. And I think we will. And it's a massive opportunity to get through to the semi-finals of a major competition, which we haven't done for a few years. So I'm looking forward to it. I know there won't be many people there tonight because Villa cocked up a little bit with the ticket prices. But no, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully we can get the win and get into the semi-finals.
How do you view, Max, then finally, this competition? Because as I mentioned, with their Premier League position, they are in a little bit of a precarious position, and ahead of the weekend, that's a massive game at home against Southampton on Saturday for Villa. So how do they, I suppose actually for you personally, Max, how do you view this competition? Do you think, let's go for it, let's really have a chance? You're at the quarterfinal stage, and from there, anything can happen. You're only potentially one game in the quarterfinal and two legs of a semi-final away from a final appearance at Wembley. Or are you thinking, because of the fact that Villa are just above the relegation zone on goal difference, that you'd be prioritising the league over the cup?
I don't really like this, you know, would you rather stay up or win a trophy sort of thing, because I want to be positive and say that we can do both. I'm 18. I've never seen Villa win a major trophy. I'm discounting the playoff trophy because that's not a major trophy. So I know we won the League Cup in 94 and 96, and that was the last trophy we actually won. So I don't see why we can't go for it this year. And I know we'll probably get Man City in the next round and get bashed over two legs. But why not go for it? Because we've got, like I said, we've got a decent squad. We've got a good size squad with a lot of quality in there all over the pitch. So why not go for it? We've got a good opportunity to get through tonight. You know, two legs, anything can happen, whether you're at home, the atmosphere will be brilliant at Villa Park if we do get through in one of those two legs. So why not go for it? Let's have a go for it. We really need to win a trophy because we haven't for, you know, over 20 years. So that's not brilliant. So why not go for it? Why not?
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Max. That was Max Stokes from the Villa On Tour YouTube channel. Looking ahead to that game in the Carabao Cup quarter-final at Villa Park tonight. Obviously, it's a very unique set of circumstances that Liverpool are playing at Villa Park with their academy side at 7.45 tonight. And then at 5.30 tomorrow afternoon, they're thousands of miles away in Qatar with the senior squad playing in the Club World Cup semi-final against Monterrey. So a very intriguing set of circumstances. We've had the Villa perspective there. And after this, I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of the Liverpool youngsters to look out for tonight.
This is Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Obviously, the first of the four Carabao Cup quarterfinals takes place tonight at Villa Park. It'll be Aston Villa against Liverpool. We've had the Villa perspective, and as a Liverpool fan, I thought I'd give you a bit of a perspective on some of the young players to look out for tonight. As I mentioned, a very unique set of circumstances today. Jurgen Klopp said it when Liverpool got through the last round in that ridiculous game at Anfield against Arsenal, that it was going to be difficult to find a solution to it. But this was the only, or the best, or the most viable option. And it does mean that in the space of 24 hours, us Liverpool fans will be able to watch us on Tuesday night and then on Wednesday night. It hasn't happened. I think Liverpool played a number of decades ago in the 80s, played Manchester United and then Everton around Christmas time on consecutive days. I think it happened between Manchester United and Arsenal back in 2001. I think they played each other in the league and the cup one day after the other. So it's a very unique set of circumstances. Because Liverpool are in the Club World Cup, they play Monterrey tomorrow in Qatar at 5.30 in the semi-finals of the Club World Cup. And it means Liverpool will play tonight with an academy side. It'll be led by Neil Critchley, who obviously is a part of the academy setup. So he will lead tonight's team. And obviously Jurgen Klopp is out there in Qatar with the first team. Obviously, it's going to be a very, very young Liverpool side today. A lot of guys not even out of their teenage years. not really out of their nappies yet, and yet playing for Liverpool. So I just wanted to talk, or wanted to just outline a few of the young players to look out for, those people that aren't Liverpool fans out there that might not necessarily know a huge amount about some of these young players. You've got Kevin Kelleher in goal, at young Republic of Ireland under 21 international. He's played in the first couple of Carabao Cup games. He's in the modern mould of a goalkeeper, very comfortable with the ball at his feet, very good in terms of his distribution. So in that modern mould of a goalkeeper rather than the old fashioned, just simply a good shot stopper. So a good player to look out for in goal. At the back, it will probably be two young Dutch centre-backs. Kiana Herver, who Liverpool signed from the Ajax Academy 18 months ago, who recently played for the Holland under-17s at the World Cup. A very good young player that made his debut at the age of 16 against Wolves in the FA Cup earlier this year. And Seth Vandenberg alongside him, who was signed from PEC Zwolle over the summer, was linked with the likes of Bayern Munich and Barcelona, but Liverpool beat them to the signing of Vandenberg. He made his debut for the first team off the bench against MK Dons earlier in this competition. So a few players in defence there. And up front, Harvey Elliott, who was signed from Fulham, just 16 years old, has been very, very impressive in his first few appearances for Liverpool in this competition. He will probably fly out along with Seth Vandenberg and Kiana Herver straight out to Qatar after tonight's game. Louis Longstaff, you might think you know the surname, and he was bought or was signed from the Newcastle Academy back in 2015. But he isn't related to Sean or Matty Longstaff, despite sharing the same surname and growing up in a very similar area of the country. He scored 5 goals in 16 appearances for Liverpool's under-23 team this season, including 2 against Napoli in the UEFA Youth League. So a good young 18-year-old winger. And Rian Brewster, a lot of people will know that name, has been linked with a loan move in January. He's been linked with Leeds, also linked with Swansea because of the link with Steve Cooper, who was the England under-17s manager when they won the World Cup together. He is a fitness doubt for tonight, is the 19-year-old striker, but could be past fit for tonight. So as a Liverpool fan, I'm very, very excited to see a lot of these young players get an opportunity. We've got a fantastic academy, and this is an opportunity for these young players that we quite often talk about how, and this season has been different to previous seasons, about young players not getting an opportunity in Premier League sides. Now, I know this isn't the Premier League, and I know it's not a full-strength Liverpool side because the first team's over in Qatar, but this is still a first-team Liverpool fixture, and it's a Carabao Cup quarter-final. So it's a great opportunity for these young Liverpool players tonight. Would I be disappointed if we got knocked out tonight? Yes, I would be. Of course it is, because I want us to win every game that we play, no matter what competition it is. Would I lose sleep over it? No, because it is the Carabao Cup, and I'm not trying to say that in a disrespectful way. But if you ask me, what would I rather, win the League Cup and miss out on the Premier League title, or win the Premier League and get knocked out tonight? Well, we know which one I'd go for. It's the latter of those two. So it should be a really intriguing night to see how the youngsters go up against a more experienced Villa side that will have plenty of changes in there. We were talking to Max Stokes just a few minutes ago. There are expected to be many changes in the Aston Villa side tonight, but really looking forward to seeing these Liverpool youngsters in action. Plenty of really exciting young talent there, and I'm backing us to win, to get through to that semi-final. Would I be disappointed if we got knocked out? Yes, I would be. Would it be the end of the world? No, it wouldn't be the end of the world, but yeah, I'm backing us to win. I'm backing us to beat them, even with an academy side out there tonight. As I said, it's going to be a bit of a weird experience watching us play at 7:45 tonight in the Carabao Cup, and then thousands of miles away in Qatar playing at 5:30 tomorrow afternoon. A very unique set of circumstances in the Carabao Cup. We talked a little bit earlier about Mikel Arteta, potentially could be the next Arsenal manager. Manchester City not supposedly too happy with the way in which Arsenal have gone about it. Earlier on the breakfast show, they were joined, Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's were joined by Andy Hampson, PA sports journalist in the Northwest, especially focusing on Manchester City. They discussed Manchester City's draw yesterday in the Champions League, a pretty tasty one in prospect against Real Madrid in the last 16, but also discussing Arsenal's approach for their assistant coach, Mikel Arteta.
First of all, it doesn't cease to amaze me how these things come out. I mean, how does a photographer know that he's going to get something good if he stood outside Mikel Arteta's house at 1:30 in the morning? But yeah, the story's got out. It just seemed that Mikel Arteta can become the Arsenal manager if he wants to. It's going to be a big decision for him to make. He can stay at City working under Guardiola and have continue having a very comfortable life. Or if he really, really wants to be the manager, he can go for this. I mean, if you're going to become a manager, Arsenal is a fantastic club to start with, you know, one of the great clubs of English football. Obviously, the decision for him would be, would Manchester City be an even better place to start if he hangs on and waits for Guardiola to leave? I think, well, obviously, it's not gone as well as City would have liked this season, and perhaps City are regressing now, not refreshing the squad a little bit over the summer. Perhaps this is an opportunity for Guardiola to refresh his backroom staff as well. Mikel Arteta is very, very highly thought of. That they'll be really disappointed to lose him, but maybe it's an opportunity to look forward.
Yeah, well, and on that note, I mean, if you're Pep Guardiola, of course, you mentioned you will be disappointed, of course, because they've worked really well alongside each other. However, you'd think that as much as Man City, and of course, if there has been an illegal approach, they're going to get compensated, you would think, for that. I think most people deep down would understand if he takes this gig. You mentioned the fact that Arsenal, they have been, look, predominantly a top six club for however long now. To go in as your first managerial gig is a fantastic opportunity.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, he knows Arsenal well too, having played there, having captained the club. A wonderful chance for him, really. I mean, the Arsenal job, you know, I think this is only the second time in 23 years that the job has become available. So, I mean, yeah, I think it'd be very hard to turn it down if he's offered it.
I'm just wondering what it is about Mikel Arteta that's deemed to be so special. Clearly, he's so highly rated at City by Pep Guardiola is no mug, let's be honest. And now Arsenal want him. And it can't just be that it's in vogue at the minute to get a former player, parachute them into the club and have a feel-good factor about it. What actual substance is there to dictate that Mikel Arteta will be a good manager at Arsenal?
Well, Guardiola has known Arteta for a very long time. Guardiola's in the team at Barcelona when Arteta was coming through the academy there, and he's known him ever since. Apparently, the story goes when Guardiola was the manager of Barcelona back in 2012, they had a game against Chelsea, and he actually got in touch with Mikel Arteta because he knew him and asked him for some guidance on how to take on Chelsea, and he was very impressed with what Arteta had to say. And a few years later, they bumped into each other again when Arteta was at Arsenal, and Bayern Munich were playing Arsenal, and then. Yeah, they had a chat, and Guardiola said, "Look, if I ever come to work in England, would you like to work with me?" And obviously, when he did come to City, Arteta retired and he took up the position there. Arteta apparently worked very well individually with players. Mm. He's good one to one. He does have good relationships with them. He helps them. Leroy Sané struggled when he first arrived at City and settling in, and Arteta apparently was brilliant with him. And Gabriel Jesus recently was saying how good Mikel Arteta has been for him, and then Fernandinho as well has said, you know, he's a wonderful character on the training ground. We'll have to wait and see what he's going to be like tactically. Although I think back to the start of last season in the Champions League, City went into the campaign with a touchline ban hanging over Guardiola, and Arteta actually had to take the first game against Lyon. And he spoke in the pre-match press conference, and he came across really, really well. I was quite impressed with him. Fortunately, City did lose the game, but I think Arteta did create good impressions, and ever since then, it has seemed likely that he's going to be a manager sooner or later.
Indeed, there were some interesting comments there. We heard from Pep talking about the Premier League and how City have effectively made Liverpool stronger, made the Premier League stronger. And he makes a good point. Obviously, before the last couple of seasons, it was always sort of mid-80s would ordinarily win the league. Every now and then you get low 90s. But obviously, last two seasons, them scoring 100 points, 98 points, it does seem like the bar has certainly risen, and that's largely thanks to Pep and Man City.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with him. I think just before Guardiola arrived in 2016, Leicester finished with 81 points when they were champions. And 2 years later, City winning it with 100, 98 last season. Yeah, he's come along and he's transformed English football, really, taking it to new levels, set new standards, set the bar so high, Liverpool have had to try to match them to try to compete. And obviously City have had that little fall off this season, and City are the victims of their own success in a way because they set the standards so high. Liverpool have matched them, and now they're finding themselves quite a bit behind with a lot of catching to do. I don't think they're going to do it now. I think they're thinking really about the Champions League primarily now as their main target for the rest of the season. But it does show you know, how good Liverpool are this season, it is down to them striving to beat City.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned the Champions League there, and it's very timely because City drew Real Madrid. Now, interestingly, Manchester City are still the favourites, according to the bookies, to win the Champions League this season over Liverpool, over Real Madrid, over everyone. Manchester City are the favourites. First and foremost, do you think Manchester City have the capacity to finally break their Champions League duck this year?
Well, I do, yes. You know, they've got a wonderful manager, as we know, and they've got a great squad. It's a good draw for them, really. I did see some City fans yesterday sort of saying, oh, this isn't really fair. We've won our group and we've ended up drawing Real Madrid, whereas Tottenham came second in their group, and they've come out with Leipzig. I think that's a bit unfair because Leipzig are doing really well in the Bundesliga this season. They're top. I think Real Madrid are beatable. They're not the team that they were under Zinedine Zidane the first time round. I don't think they're quite that good. Obviously, they've got some really good players like Karim Benzema and Luka Modric, and we know how good Eden Hazard is, although I'm not sure he's doing as well as he would have liked. But I think City, with Kevin De Bruyne, Sergio Aguero, Raheem Sterling, world-class players, I think they should be thinking, yeah, we can beat them. We're as good a match as them. And obviously, by then they'll hope to have Laporte back in the team and looking a lot stronger.
Yeah. Well, it's worth just pointing out, Real Madrid are currently second in La Liga. They're tied on points with Barcelona, but they're lower on goal difference. They're on 35 points after their 16 games, 10 wins to Barcelona's 11. So you're right, it's not that kind of all-conquering Zinedine Zidane side that we've seen in previous years. But yeah, like you said, again, they're still no mugs. Sorry, just lastly, I don't know if you'd have the info on this, because we've been trying to look for it and we can't find it yet. But in terms of a potential compensation fee for Mikel Arteta, i.e. that Arsenal might end up paying City, is there anything rumoured at all? Is there anything, a figure doing the rounds at the minute?
Well, not exactly, no, but it will be at least seven figures. City will be looking for at least that because, they're not happy with the way Arsenal have gone about themselves over this. They didn't approach City, they didn't make an approach to City. It's especially annoying, really, because City were at the Emirates on Sunday and the directors were mingling after the game in the yeah. lounges. And none of this came up, and then, you know, 6-7 hours later in the middle of the night, it turns out that the Arsenal managing director is at Mikel Arteta's house. They're not pleased, and they will be looking for compensation. Don't have an exact figure, but it will be in seven figures.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Crouchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. There was one game last night to round off the Premier League weekend. It finished Crystal Palace 1, Brighton 1 at Selhurst Park in the M23 derby. In Roy Hodgson's 100th game in charge, Wilfred Zaha cancelled out Neil Maupay's opening goal. To talk all things Palace now, I'm delighted to say we're joined by James Howard from the Back of the Nest podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, James. So it seems like it took Palace about 70 minutes to really start attacking. And then once they did, they caused Brighton real problems. So why, I suppose the big question is, why did it take Palace so long to actually really kick on in the game?
Yeah, good afternoon. I don't know. It took 70 minutes. We didn't seem to get our passing going and we were out of sorts. And it wasn't just down to any particular individuals. It was as a team. I read some post-match comments which suggested that, and I think even Roy Hodgson himself admitted that he got the tactics wrong when he fielded the team, and that Brighton were exploiting us in wide areas, and he hadn't done enough to support the midfield and protect the midfield, and we were really, really poor, and I haven't seen us, you know, recently that poor for quite a few games, and it was particularly frustrating because, you know, this happened last season against Brighton, you know, our so-called number one rivals. And we don't seem to be able to raise our game against a team like Brighton. And, you know, let's face it, you know, we didn't start playing until 70 minutes. And if it wasn't for, you know, our wonder boy, Wilfried Zaha again, we may well have lost it.
We'll come on to Wilfried Zaha in just a few moments' time. But considering the number of injuries, the number of absentees, either through injury or through suspension, in particular in defensive areas, do you think Roy Hodgson will be looking at this game and thinking, even though it was at home against Brighton, that a point is an OK point and you move on from this? Or will he be kind of frustrated and wondering what could have been if maybe he had got the tactics right from the start and maybe if Palace had gone for it a little bit earlier than they did?
I think he did go for it. I think, you know, he had the likes of Zaha, Ayew and Benteke that were recalled, you know, and so he had a fairly attacking strike force. And I know from watching, you know, the initial 5 to 10 minutes that we were really trying to get on the front foot. So I think that he's initially before the game, I think he was going out there to win, despite the fact that we have got a particular problem at fullback in the left back position. But subsequently, I feel that, you know, as the game progressed and as, you know, the team weren't playing so well, I think most Palace fans I've spoken to and the manager will come away thinking, do you know what, a point out of that wasn't a bad result.
Let's talk then about Wilfried Zaha. He scored the equaliser in the game. It was a pretty good goal as well. Looking like he was going to curl it with his right foot, then chopping back onto the left foot and then rifled it into the top corner with Matt Ryan not being able to do anything about it. After the game, Roy Hodgson admitted that it might be hard for the club to keep hold of Zaha in January. Is that time where we approach a transfer window? And I'm sure for you Palace fans, it must always be a nervy build-up to the window, wondering, will he or won't he go? What's your view going into this window? Do you think that Palace are in a good position to keep hold of him, or are the nerves just ratcheting up another level, thinking he could be gone in January?
Well, if he'd asked me the same question a couple of months ago, or even a month ago, I would have suggested that no one's going to come in for him at the price that we're looking for. But, you know, he's really hit a bit of form recently. You know, he's got 3 goals now, and he's not only scoring, he's playing particularly well. And I think he's now back to the form he was most of the season last season. So quite rightly, there will be probably a number of top clubs that will be looking to purchase him in January. I think we are still going to have the battle between the board and, you know, the clubs that are in for him coming to a price, a reasonable price, which is acceptable for us to sell him. And also we need to ensure that we've got replacements, because quite clearly we rely on him so much that if he went, I think we would really, really struggle.
Do you think it's too cynical of me to say, James, that Zaha maybe at times raises his performance level as we approach a window? And the reason why I say that is because obviously statistics can tell you what they want to, and maybe statistics don't tell you the whole story. But the reality was, the first couple of months of the season, Zaha, in terms of the actual statistics of goals and assists, wasn't contributing a huge amount. In recent weeks, he's suddenly scoring goals, getting assists, contributing in bigger terms. Do you think that there's a risk that because the window's approaching, that's the reason for his upturn in form? Or do you think that actually he has been performing reasonably well? It's just in the last few weeks that those numbers are starting to come.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen any evidence to suggest that he hasn't been trying as hard at the beginning of the season as he has now. I think, you know, he was a little bit unfit at the beginning of the season because he, if you remember, he was away on the African Cup, so he didn't come back to training as early as the other guys. So it took him, you know, maybe a month to get up to speed fitness-wise. Then he came in and, you know, he started playing well. He won a penalty, which was an overturned VAR rule at Arsenal. We got a goal from that. And, you know, I've seen the effort. I've seen the fitness levels are up there. So all barring the first month of the season, I think he's still been in looking a good player, albeit he wasn't particularly scoring goals. But I think that it was excusable that the initial first few games he was a little bit rusty, because he was possibly not as fit as everybody else.
And just finally then, James, looking at Palace's position, they're up to ninth after the point yesterday. 23 points. They're actually only 3 points off fifth, 6 points actually only off the top four. I'm assuming that you must be pretty happy, because at the start of the season, I thought with Palace's lack of summer transfer business, not really replacing the likes of Aaron Wan-Bissaka, that I thought Palace might struggle this season, but they've surprised many and had a very solid start to the season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, taking this game last night in isolation, and if you forget about that, you know, and I know it's against our biggest rivals, and probably a lot of fans out there are not particularly happy with the performance and, you know, getting a draw. But, you know, overall, you know, without having, you know, the money wasn't there in the summer. We couldn't replace Wan-Bissaka. We didn't get in strikers that we wanted to. I think, you know, it's remarkable that we are in the position of ninth at the moment. And, you know, you've only got to look at our next, you know, four or five fixtures. They're all winnable fixtures. I think they're with sort of mid to bottom half teams. So, you know, we could well be pushing up the league. So I like to stay positive. You know, I really hope that, you know, come the new year, we can keep hold of Wilfred, and maybe we can make the additions that we couldn't do over the summer and really have a strong second half of the season and finish top 10. Yeah.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, James. That was James Howard from the Back of the Nest podcast reacting to Palace's 1-0 draw against Brighton and Wilfred Zaha. The speculation goes on. Will he still be a Palace player at the end of January? I'm sure these next 6 weeks will feel like a very long 6 weeks for Palace fans. Whenever they approach the window with Wilfred Zaha, it will be with a sense of trepidation, not knowing whether he's going to be a Palace player by the end of the window. Just a reminder of some of the big stories in the Premier League this afternoon. Two big managerial stories. Sky and Italy are reporting this afternoon that Carlo Ancelotti has agreed a 4.5-year contract to become the new Everton head coach. It's believed also that his son Davide will be his assistant alongside Duncan Ferguson. It's Everton closing in on their next manager. Where are Arsenal up to with Mikel Arteta? He's the leading contender. He met with Arsenal officials the other day. Pep Guardiola has said that Arteta will still be with the squad, will still be working as his assistant on Wednesday night when they play Oxford in the Carabao Cup quarterfinals. So still no movement, massive movement on that. How much will that develop? Obviously, Everton play Arsenal on the weekend. Will it be Arteta against Ancelotti on the weekend?
This is Love Sport.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.